Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I'm Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in studio, the house is full, Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
Local hero Chris Rankin. Everyone's here. Stephen Weasel Hurley, the keeper of the hydraulic upright Twitter handle. That's just special. I mean, we're 2 months in, and it's not old yet. That's your daughter, or excuse me, my daughter. Well, your daughter too, but our daughters and that Twitter handle both not old yet. Boom, I'm reaching there, but it's not wrong. Anyways, of course, coming to you via NGSCSports.com live, and if you don't happen to catch us right away, that's okay. Check us out on Spreaker, iTunes, iHeartRadio, the TuneIn app. Whole lot of cool stuff going on here with NGSC Sports. Of course, NGSCSports.com. Got a whole lot going on. Introduce something very interesting. The Last 48. We're looking through the past 2 days of sport. Brought to you very quick by our very own Ralph Garcia. Don Rafael Garcia, as he's known on this show. Go ahead and check that out. And a lot of cool stuff going on about the NBA Finals, things going down. And, by the way, Stanley Cup action. Boom. Hey, Weasel, you were at the Stanley Cup Finals.
Totally was.
It was quite
an experience. Decent atmosphere over there.
Have you been to an NHL game before?
Nope.
Would you recommend it to a friend and or a family member?
Yeah, sure. It was very cool, and it was a finals game. Unfortunately, spoiler here. The
spoiler.
Hey, some people liked TiVo things. So
okay, or like, so if you want record the outcome of the game from the past weekend, we're totally not going to tell you that the Ducks won. Oh wait, they're not even in it.
Yeah, they. It was a tough game for my wife to take. She's a Blackhawks fan.
Oh,
but
you gave it away with the Chicago tie.
Yep, but at least it's tied 1-1. And then when NHL's done, we still got football on its way.
More of a struggle for your wife to accept, that loss or the fact that Jay Cutler sucks?
Oh, no, she knew about Jay Cutler and stuff. I mean, come on. Everybody knows about Jay Cutler except the GM.
Ooh.
Yeah. There's an article that says the NFL's best worst quarterback deals for teams. I think maybe Jay Cutler, they're going to talk about him there. Just a thought.
Well, let me ask you this. In that discussion, should we account for Jamarcus Russell?
Well, he's gone. I mean,
that was a pretty garbage deal, wasn't it?
To date. Yeah, well, that was just how the draft was. The draft, you have a player that hasn't stepped up his foot, not only on a game day field, but on the practice field. And
actually,
they were giving
a lot on the practice
field. Jamarcus Russell, I think his deal was like $50 million or so.
$40 million.
Only 40. Okay, that's cool. Then.
Yeah, stop. Gosh.
Yeah, 50 would have been ridiculous, but Jamarcus Russell, $40 million.
Yeah.
So
here's my pocket change if that bothers you that much. I'll give you $40 million. Third of a half of a pennies. That didn't make any sense. I don't know.
So now it's more of like the NBA kind of salaries going out, like by where you're picked, but it's not ridiculous.
Yeah, that's true. They also have the advent of non-guaranteed contracts in the NFL, which Adrian Peterson reminded us of last week.
Yeah.
Thank you for that public service announcement. No, it wasn't. Yeah, well, I'll put it this way. I mean, the hockey as a sport, in my mind, second place in toughness to the NFL. In my or check that. The NFL is second to hockey in toughness, in my mind. I don't know.
In positions for all of sports, a lot of people point to the hockey goalie as one of the most strenuous and toughest positions to play in any sport.
Yeah. I don't know that I would say that myself, but I get the argument. I don't know, Chris, what do you come out
of? Well, I mean, yeah, you got this black, thick rubber puck coming at you at like 120 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And just, you know, you got all the padding on. Yes, you do, but, you know, just have to make that reaction a split second all the time from where the puck's coming from with all the people in the way. Yeah, it's probably the most strenuous mentally and physically there. I mean, basically with hockey, I think it's probably the most physical sport there, even more than football, because they go through 82 games. You know, they go a couple times a week.
Yeah,
in that with the skates skating back and forth. You know,
they go through 82 games. Granted, it's only is it an hour? It's 20 minutes a period or 15? I can never remember.
It's 20 minutes 20, a period. Yeah.
But there's no stoppage. It's constant, right?
No.
Well, there's stoppage. And there's stoppages.
The occasional penalty and icing, maybe. But it's not like football where,
they do stop it.
7 seconds
go.
Stop.
Yeah.
It's the difference with hockey and soccer. Pretty much soccer, they say, there's a penalty. We're gonna keep the clock running. And then at the end, for extra play, I forgot what they call it.
Extra stoppage time.
I think they take a note of how many minutes that they like slowed things down with like a penalty or anything
actually,
like that.
Injuries, cards.
True. Cards, yeah. So
it's a bit like Taj.0. They say 20 seconds, but it's not always 20. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, but
what I mean to say is if it's something major like that, they'll put more time on that. You are correct.
But then also with soccer, it's to the ref's discretion too. Cause if they put 5 minutes of stoppage time and a team is attacking down, he won't stop it right at that 5 minute mark. He'll let it go until the play is dead.
And if he has to like use the restroom when he wants the game to be over so he can
so
go to the bar or something.
Yeah, I also shut it 10 seconds short too. So.
1 minute.
Well, he's not the one that says it now. They have a guy. There's a timekeeper on the sideline that keeps track.
Yep.
So.
And he's all like, "My wife is pissed. I gotta get home."
wife is pissed. I'm gonna make this 8 minutes long.
apparently, a bit more passive aggressive this line. Anyways,
it's tied right now. I'm gonna end the game now. So we're going to
two
15-minute quarters in overtime.
Give me that golden goal, hippies. No, I don't know. A golden goal is the game-winning goal for you know, those who don't.
And that's already after they play an extra 30 minutes.
So, yeah. Well, actually, we didn't even really get a chance to talk about it. Qatar still hosting the 2020 World Cup or something like that? I don't know. But
that could be up tossed there because...
And that's what I wanted to get to. Because corruption. And, like, so 15 guys and then eventually the president all going to jail over corruption charges. Good times.
Well, yeah, and then the Women's World Cup is going on right now.
In Canada.
And, well, it's going to be in North America. There's going to be some games here in the U.S. But it wasn't supposed to be over here. And they just last minute said, all right, we're sending it to North America. It was supposed to be in one of the corrupt countries.
You know. Anyway, so we kind of went around the horn here. So I'm going to do something else. This isn't really a basketball question per se, but basketball is the backdrop. This is more kind of a focus on the MVP. For those of you who haven't seen the first episode of the Sports Symposium yet, which, by the way, my video guy, Demosthenes Euclid, tells me that there will be a release this week. I'm hoping so. Hopefully his two jobs won't, you know, delay him on that. But I know he's trying. But in episode one of the Sports Symposium on the NGSC Sports YouTube channel, I talk about MVPs there in the first place. So I got kind of a thing for MVP debate because too many people get attached to numbers, and it's one of those things where numbers is only one element of the argument, and I like it unless you say something completely dumb like, you know, Russell Wilson is an MVP or something like that. Anyways, that's right. I said it. What? What, Weasel?
Still bitter.
How am I bitter?
You've always been bitter. With like Russell Wilson, it's like kind of like a...
Well, he didn't do anything to put me there. See, that's the reason why. See, let me clear this up, and I'm glad you did that. Because let me clear this up. It's not at Russell Wilson I am bitter. It is people like Tony Dungy who don't watch the film. That's right. I said it. Tony Dungy, you're on notice. You tweeted back at me trying to say, oh, no, don't. Russell Wilson had a great game. No, no. Marshawn Lynch, stop it. Go home. I would say go home, Tony. You're drunk, but he probably doesn't drink. So
he's got a new weapon. So in Jimmy Graham. So that should definitely help him out.
Yes, and a little less protection in the middle for it with Max Unger. But I'm very curious to see that too. However, as offensive linemen departing go, excellent segue, Weasel. I was going to ask this MVP question, but I'll do that coming back from the break. So the 49ers have had a lot of departures lately. Walk through them with me so I don't forget, guys. There's that many. Mikey Upati at guard. Patrick Willis at the linebacker spot. Chris Borland at the linebacker spot. Dan Scuta as a free agency departure as well, like Upati at the linebacker spot. Justin Smith at the defensive line. I think that's everybody.
And then the guy recently retired.
Yeah, well, thanks, sir. Thanks for, there you go. Well, no, you might as well just report it now. Who was it, Weasel?
Oh, well, I knew Borland did it earlier, but...
Anthony Davis is the right tackle.
Anthony Davis.
See, of course you don't know his name. He's an offensive lineman. Why got to impress fat people, Weasel?
It's just it's just really weird that, you know, there's like, is it two or three players retire, and two of them were like under 25 or 26.
Four now, yeah. Four. Two of them were under 25, yeah. That's correct.
I think Justin Smith wasn't in the league for like, what, 12 years or so?
Yes.
12, 13 years.
It
and
was time.
Patrick Willis, I mean, he's been in the league, I would say, about 10.
Not for 12 years.
I would say about maybe 8 or so. But
I don't think he got that far in. I'll check it out. But, yeah.
It's... But, you know, Borland just said it.
Chris Borland, yeah. I mean, yeah. He was a rookie, so it's all amazing there, too. But with all that departure, there were four retirements now, and two departures, at least. Four starters, by the way, that retired. What's in the water in San Francisco? Does anybody have a theory? And I'm willing to take speculation at this point, but does anybody have a theory on why on earth you got all these guys going?
There was the departure of their head coach, Harbaugh. So
correct, Jim Harbaugh going to the University of Michigan.
Yeah. So, it's just weird having all those players like retire afterwards.
By the way, really quickly, Weasel, Patrick Willis retired after eight seasons. 49ers.
Yeah, it's close.
I thought 10 sounded a little high, but anyways, carry on.
Yeah, but it's just that team. I was kind of a little bit like miffed with how. I think some of the players were saying he expected too much out of us, and I'm like, you're a professional. This is what you're supposed to do.
Dang.
You're supposed to be the best out there.
Did you just call them soft?
Well, I mean, it's like...
Put your name on it, Weasel.
Yeah.
Did you call them soft?
Yeah, of course I called them soft. Soft.
Weasel, weasel!
Yeah, boy. So, it's just that... I just don't get how...
Like a pissed off one right there.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah, boy.
What?
I'm not happy anymore. You keep cutting me off.
Yeah, it's just... doesn't really add up to where that these players, they're professionals on all that good stuff. And they're complaining about a coach that worked them too hard and stuff like that. So
interesting concept. Chris, is it something in the water?
Yeah, there's something going on out there. I don't know if it's the water or whatever, the ground, the organization itself. There's something that's a little fishy out there. This last one, Anthony Davis, kind of retired because of, you saying, you know, his mind and body trying to get the heel for a little bit. He's just going to take some time off because he did miss four games last year with a concussion. Maybe that's still lingering in his head a little bit.
Yeah.
Possibly. So,
and especially with this video that Weasel had me watch called Head Games, that was about it focused first on a Harvard football player who then went to the WWE and suffered a bunch of concussions and did a lot of research on CTE and things like that, which basically after watching that it kind of makes you just afraid of sports in general. But in truth, you know, I think that knowledge is out there more than it ever was before, you know, and as much as people want to vilify Roger Goodell, at the very least, it's on his watch as the NFL started to make this stuff known. And so to your credit, Chris, what you were saying is taking the time for his body to recover, which first of all, you know, he had a lot of injuries the past season. And then if he had a concussion issue, taking a year or two off, I think will actually, if nothing else, he'll be watched closely as a case study. You know what I mean? If he comes back, will he be good still? Is it? I don't know. I kind of cut you off, but yeah, keep going with that thought that you had.
Yeah, I mean, what you said, it's with his mind and everything like that. He said within the last year he's been thinking about it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
I kind of think that these players. Don't like the coaching hire they had, really. They'd rather Thompson. Retire. I mean, they said he was a player's coach, but, I mean, all these players retiring at a young age when he's a player's coach, I think there's a little more to it, like you said. But, I mean, with Anthony Davis, it's just...
Yeah.
I think he's looking at all these cases with all these lawsuits going on with concussions and everything like that and how bad it is. I think he's like, you know, I don't want to be that. I want to enjoy my life. I put my time in, you know, I get, I'm live my dream. Let me sit back a year, try to maybe do something else with my life so I can enjoy the rest of my life. Because, I mean, quality, he's been in the league, what, 5 years? 2010?
Something like that. I'll check
in
that
2010
out.
Was he was drafted. Him and Iupati were drafted together in the first round by the Niners.
I believe that's correct, yeah.
So, I mean, he's been in 5 years. He can retire from there, still get the check because he's here. He hit that 4-year mark with the NFL. Yeah. So, I mean, he can retire, get, you know, the $400,000 for the rest of his life or something like that. It's the retirement. I don't remember exactly what he is now.
He doesn't get $400,000 a year for the rest of his life. That's not how it works. I mean, maybe one could argue for that being a worthwhile prospect. But, yeah, you're right. 5 years. Yeah, he was drafted in 2010, just like you said.
So, I mean, he gets something of it anyway still for us with him retiring.
And started in 71 games. So check this out, right? So he's got, what is that? 64, right. 64 games without missing a start in the regular season. And then he's only able to play 7 the next year. I can see how that could do something to one's mind. Literally and figuratively, now that I, you know, use that term. But do you think this will be a new trend in the NFL? And if it is, are there enough players to account for this? I mean, I think that's a very practical problem, is if this becomes the trend, are there enough quality players suiting up?
Well, I mean, you just got to look. The quality might be a little less, but really when you get to that level, there's 125 Division 1A schools, not including 1AA, Division 2, 3.
Well, first of all,
schools.
I'm not counting stuff like the Buffalo Bulls, for example, or what is it? FAU is Division 1, Florida Atlantic University, for those who don't know. So there might be 125 Division 1 schools, but how many is quality talent? And to be clear, I'm not sitting here saying that you have to have played for one of the power conferences to be a good football player. Let's not be stupid. Okay, Jerry Rice went to East Mississippi Valley State. Granted, not a Div 1 school, but, you know, what was it? To start his college career, J.J. Watt went to Central Michigan. Now, granted, he ended up getting to Wisconsin eventually, but, you know, I need a better example than that.
Well,
damn
I mean,
it. Joe Flacco went to quality football players. Oh no, he did.
I'm just looking up some more info about the guy, but
what do you got, Weasel?
I think it's going to be a stalwart for the Steelers in the 70s. So, be 1 minute.
Okay, that's an excellent teaser. But Chris, what were you saying?
With the players. I mean, there was what the number. I think it was the 5 best offensive linemen in this draft that was just recently. He was from a Division II school.
Yeah. Well, I mean, shoot, last year there were a lot of guys. I mean, I think the guy you're talking about is on the Cowboys O-line. If not, it's a good guess. But
no, the one that went from the Cowboys is Collins. He didn't go to a Division II school.
No, I'm not talking about this draft. I mean the one before.
The one before.
Yeah, Lael Collins is the one that made the big news and all that. And yeah, no, we're not talking about him. Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, this is something that I felt both feel good and bad about at the same time. I like the fact that players are self-aware, that the culture of the sport is such to take stupid practices out of the game, right? It's just a few years ago we had a guy like Brian Urlacher just retire. No, I don't have a problem with Urlacher, but he's a dude that no holds barred said, yo, if I would fake a concussion protocol test to stay on the field. First of all, then the NFL gets blamed for that. But I mean, you know, we're just a few years removed away from that Colt McCoy hit where James Harrison blasted him something silly. And for a while, Harrison was seen as a victim. Hell, I'll be honest. I thought for a minute, I was in that camp too that thought Harrison was getting targeted. But truth be told, I think we as a sports society is starting to understand that while we like the big hits and all that, physics dictates that something has to change because we're starting to find things out that are a particularly high risk for playing sports, especially football like that. So I don't know. See, it's probably a bad time to be talking about this fresh off of watching that DVD. I blame you. No, I'm just kidding.
They try to keep it real there, and it's like it wasn't like, you know, the movie, I think it was Head Games.
Correct.
It's just they were pretty much, it was like a, just like a warning to everyone that to watch out for kids playing, you know, sports and stuff. Their brains aren't exactly, you know, fully developed.
Technically speaking, your brain does not develop until 21 completely, which is why the drinking age is 21.
Yeah, so I think one of the things they were saying is, and I think some players, they actually have their kids follow this, but that you have, you play like, you know, flag football or something as a kid, and then you play a contact sport like, you know, Pop Warner or whatever, and you then do that at the age of like, I think 14 and up, but not when you're like 6. Or 7.
Yeah, you know, have you guys, has anybody seen that show on, I believe it's on Spike or Esquire or whatever the hell they're calling it now, Friday Night Tykes?
I haven't seen it, but heard of it.
I saw it. I saw a few episodes, you know, because football. And I'm seeing these kids, and they are kids, they're like 8, 6, they're younger than 10 in some cases, or at least they struck me that way, I could be wrong. But these cats are thumping.
Yeah.
And it's something stupid. NFL players, if NFL players hit like this in practice as these kids do on a regular basis, the NFLPA would go absolutely ape expletive. And to see how some of these kids got jacked and see them on the ground, like, you know, making those child, the sounds that a child makes when they are hurt, you know. Mm-hmm. And even had a couple stories where kids suffered concussions and are sitting out watching these teams play that they were playing for. And they're talking about kids getting seizures and stuff like that. And yet, these coaches are going at it like these are all job applications for the NFL. No. You know, you're doing it wrong. I don't know. It gets scary when they're that young.
I think there is a program, I think it's something like Heads Up or something like that. The NFL runs, which is program, yeah. It's like they should teach that to the NFL players, but it's pretty much, yeah, when you make a tackle or and if you're running, I think you always, you know, keep your head up and, you know, you tackle with like the shoulder.
That's a good
and
idea,
then the wrap.
Whether you're tackling or not. If you have the damn ball, you should
see proper way, that's how you should do it. You won't get on SportsCenter. But
I don't know. Hey,
if you do a proper one, yes.
A true, well-executed hit will find its way on the top 10. You better recognize it.
Yeah.
You know.
But it's kids. I think kids sometimes see where, like, people, like, catapult their head into another player for, like, a tackle and stuff. But
not to mention, like, these kids that young, their heads are so disproportionate with their body. And then, oh, by the way, let's put a big old helmet to cover that mess.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does nothing to the physics of the situation. Not really.
So
I don't know. I'm not one of these people that advocates against playing football, but the 6-year-olds? Really? I don't know.
Just mentioning about how you have like these players like you said Jerry Rice and such. They come from these small schools.
Yes.
And the thing about it was, if we go back to the 1970s, you have, in 1974, you have John Stallworth.
Boom! There's your teaser drop.
He's a Steelers wide receiver back in the day. He's actually in the Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And he was possibly part of one of the best NFL drafts ever.
Ever!
It's like Stallworth, Lambert, Webster, and I believe it was a wide receiver.
You can't mean Lynn Swan.
Swan, yeah. I think Swan was up there. And the thing about it was that this guy, he went to Alabama A&M. And the thing about nowadays and like 20 years ago, actually, I guess 30 years ago or so, mm-hmm. is that they didn't have the internet. They didn't they didn't really have like scouts at like early 70s and stuff.
Oh, no, they did. They just had to travel.
Yeah. So they're doing, you know, all these travels. And you have this guy, John Stallworth, who was, you know, in this small school, but it's like, I think that coach was like, we got to pick him now, got to pick him now. It's like, nobody really knows about this guy. So they waited and waited, and he was picked in the 4th round. And It's nowadays, though, you get those small school players, and they at least get their name out there, not only to the NFL, but to the fans out there. So,
well, the NFL as a media presence is so much bigger now. Like, what's the movie with Mark Wahlberg where he's the guy from the Eagles? Invincible.
Vince Papale.
Vince Papale. Very good, Weasel. The funniest scene in that movie, to me, was earlier on where Greg Kinnear, who plays Dick Vermeil, which I don't know how they picked him, but he did a good job. Doesn't look anything like him, but details. Greg Kinnear as Dick Vermeil was accepting the coaching position at a press conference, and it's this tiny room with a small podium, and I think it's like six chairs, and like, I mean, those little colored chairs like you have in the kindergarten classes, you know what I'm talking about? And that's it. You look at a press conference now for a new Eagles head coach, it's a damn meeting hall, and that SOB is packed. Probably one of the, when they cut the show that there was just the six dudes in the chair, I might have been the only one in the theater that did it, but I laughed. I thought that crap was hilarious.
I think a way for the NFL teams to get around this, the media being all crazy and stuff, with asking questions and stuff, is to have a room that can only fit six chairs.
But then if Haloti Ngata was ever at a press conference, where would they put him? I'm trying to tell you.
On all six chairs.
On all six chairs, that's right. I would have said J.J. Watt, but he just would have tore down a new wall. Boom. Because J.J. Watt. What? I'm going to have this spike in the recording now when I just said what, right? Anyways. No, but how did we get here?
I don't know.
We were talking about something else. This was a good tangent. I'm sorry. I liked it a lot. But let me put it this way. And I know we keep touching on this, but I'm going to go around the room here. Here's your pop quiz. A way that the 49ers could be even more screwed than they are now. Weasel.
I'm going to say an injury to a top star. Like when,
who's left?
Well, Colin Kaepernick, he's like pretty much on a year-to-year basic steal.
Kind of.
So if they don't like him, they can kind of pretty much cut him. But him gone, I would say Frank Gore, but he's gone. Patrick Willis is gone. And it's like,
Navarro Bowman's 80% of what he was.
Vernon Davis is, you know, he would be a big loss.
Vernon Davis is past 30. He's not what he used to be.
Well, he could still play, though.
I'm not saying he's bad, but okay, you know. I mean, it's not like they're going to lose him too, but if he retired and went, well, no, at this point, honestly, I'm surprised. If I hear about another retirement, I'm just be like, you know what? Why not? You're just at that point where you're a boxer in a fight and you're just getting whooped and you're just trying to survive. Right now, I'm in that state as a 49ers fan. I should say I've been there since Thanksgiving last year when they played the Seahawks that night in that abysmal contest. I think I started to call it beforehand, but that was the night I stopped being a believer. I'm like, whatever, man. Look, just, oh, okay, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty much. No, but, Chris, another way the 49ers could be even more screwed.
I have Jay Cutler instead of Colin Kaepernick as the quarterback.
Oh, no! Actually, I got you one better. Blaine Gabbert beats him out as a starter. yeah.
Torrey Smith go down with an injury.
Damn, that's okay. You win. That's a good one.
That's a good one.
Or Torrey Smith say, "Yeah, I'm retiring too."
What the hell with this? No.
Forget this.
But it's very interesting when you look at the physics of the NFC West. The Seahawks, yeah, definitely still a threat. The Cardinals. Nothing to sneeze at.
They're getting up there.
Yeah, I know they're not. I know they are without Darnell Dockett because he's a 49er now. Marking an actual addition to the squad, by the way. I know. Try to hold down your excitement. But with Iupati at the guard blocking, that could improve the run game, which you have assigned many times, Weasel, that it is indeed anemic, and you are correct. I should say assigned, assess, whatever. You're right. That's the point. Weasel Weasel.
Okay. Yeah, boy.
that was an angry weasel weasel. You like that? No, but are the Rams is the NFC West now a threat to be a three-team playoff division?
They're pretty stacked. So, I mean, 49ers aren't looking that good. But everyone else, I mean, they can make a case for it.
I mean, because when you go around the horn there in the NFC, okay, the North, next question. Huh. The East, pretty much. And then the South. The South, this is cute.
South.
Got the Kardashian sisters of the NFL in that division. The East is probably, in my opinion, the biggest threat after the West. And the Cowboys, who won that division pretty solid, they kind of took a step back with DeMarco Murray. Let's call that what it is. His departure, they may be okay, but they did take a step back. Yes, Weasel.
I think pretty much the Cowboys, you see that they're pretty much, I think they have the view that our offensive line is so good that anybody could run behind it.
Yes.
So
I'll definitely agree with that.
So we'll see. We'll see. I don't know. And they're relying on Darren McFadden mostly, but it's like, we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, McFadden. Well, and don't forget the other runners there. I mean, yeah. Dunbar and, so help me, I can't remember the other guy, but he wasn't terrible either. I mean, I don't know. But, well, let's do this. We're going to go ahead and hit up a little break here. And because I can, I'm going to play some different music. I don't know what exactly yet, but because it's my show, I can do that. Yeah, let's go here. You know, I know it's not DMX, but Weasel, I see you jamming over there.
It's a good song.
You can't front on Offspring.
I'm a fan of Offspring, yeah, most definitely.
Word. That was the first concert I went to in 1994.
Memories.
I was pretty sheltered when it came to concerts. My first concert was in the 90s, but it was Journey. So figure that out. Yeah. So what was it? I was at work 2 or 3 years ago now, and someone said to me, Kyle, Journey is oldies. What did you just say to me? Well, it's 30 years old. What are you talking about? It's 30 years. Oh, damn it. It's 30 years old. Yeah, that's not memories. That's just pain. Anyways, so we are back here, of course, on NJSC Sports, NJSCSports.com, the website. This is the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, here with local hero Chris Rankin. It's good to have you in studio, man.
Yeah,
I dig it.
It's been a while.
It's not that, you know, you dust collected on your headphones, for Christ's sake. I mean, what's going on there? I don't know. And then, of course, Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
No dust there whatsoever, except when he's angry. Yeah, boy. That's going to be the running joke, Bill. Are you angry, Weasel? Yeah, boy. Anyways, I want to throw this out there because I heard the discussion, and as you guys in the studio and, of course, out in the audience may be aware by now, I have discussed that I have an affinity for listening to other sports radio, and there's one in particular I listen to regularly here in the morning. That would be one, Eric Kusilius on NBC Radio. And I'm taking this the basketball direction. I know this isn't a basketball show. But for those that may not be aware, because they live under a rock or whatever, Steph Curry is the MVP for the NBA. And, of course, LeBron James is the best player in the league. And Weasel's thinking right now, I'm glad I stopped calling him a choke artist because look what just happened in Game 2 of the NBA Finals.
I checked that out. It was pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, and by the way, the Cavs managed to steal a game on the road, which means the playoff series officially starts.
You guys, it's pretty awesome where this... The point guard for him after Kyle Irving.
Kyrie Irving.
Kyrie, close enough. He's injured anyways.
A
undrafted rookie just this year kind of shut down the MVP of the NBA in Stephon Curry. And so I think it's a Vladdy or... I'd have grabbed the name, but
his name is difficult. It's Dun. It's not Dunleavy. It's Duval Denaire. I struggle to say it. It's not that I don't know it. I just have trouble pronouncing it. But
let's just say the guy pretty much shut the MVP down.
Yeah. Well, and actually that's the key to it. I wasn't even going to go there, but that's a good point. You know, what was it? Steph Curry missed a record 13 threes in that game, as in no one else has missed that many threes in a finals game ever. Has not happened, did not happen, no, ever.
Now through Wednesday, shop the ultimate sofa sale at roomstogo.com.
I love technical difficulties.
Holy crap, I was like so confused.
Now we know what he's doing over there on the computer. He's looking for a sofa.
Yeah. Have you seen me in this chair? No, I was trying to look up the guy's name for somebody. Get that. Go to NBA.com and snag that crap. Anyways, but so what I'm getting at is Steph Curry's the MVP, but LeBron James, without Kevin Love, without Kyrie Irving, basically in a singular effort, offensively at least. You mentioned, of course, Steph Curry was shut down, carries his team on his back. Now, Eric Kusilius has been preaching since the end of the regular season that LeBron James should have been the MVP.
And the name of that guy is Matthew Dellavedova. And the nickname is Deli. That's it.
You don't get.
I'm going with Deli.
So at least spell it so people could know.
Dellavedova.
Okay. Yeah.
That sounds good.
Dellavedova. That's it. Right. There you go.
If I need to say that name, I'll just point to Chris. But Deli.
Hey, who's that old Broncos receiver? Ashley Lee.
Wow. That's a while ago. Blast from the past.
That's a real throwback for those who have listened to the show.
I know I missed the draft special here, but the Giants' third round pick. They're like, all right, who are we picking the third round? All right, we can pronounce everybody else's name on a roster. We don't have that one that we can't pronounce because Matthias Kiwanuka, they let go. So, like, we need another weird name. So, let's go with that guy right there. How do you pronounce it? I have no idea. We're selecting him.
That's the guy at the podium's problem, right? No, but Danala, say it again.
Dellavedova.
Dellavedova, that's right. So, He does his thing to play some excellent D on Steph Curry. I mean, there you go. And the question is this, though. LeBron James is hand down the best player in the league. But Steph Curry got the MVP. I think a lot of that is because LeBron missed like 20 games in the season. So let me pose you this question. Anybody who misses 20 games in the season is ineligible for an MVP. True or false?
I think you could still be MVP, I'm pretty sure.
Interesting. Chris?
See, they base it off of scoring stats, so I'd say, yeah, they probably wouldn't be eligible for it.
Yeah, and that's my thing, too. Now, granted, I mean, I see where you're coming from, Weasel. Like, if I did the research, which I didn't because I'm not an NBA person. This isn't an NBA show. If I did the research and figured out that the games that Braun missed was against garbage teams like the Magic. That's right, I said it.
The Knicks,
very good. That pretty much the Magic, the Knicks, the Timberwolves, right? You know, basically any team out east that's below the fourth seed. Yeah, the Pelicans. I mean, basically any team out east that's below the fourth
seed. Basically almost any team, correct?
Yeah.
That's not the Pacers or the Falcons.
Hawks, close enough.
Yeah, right,
it's because Atlanta. No, I understand. Right. It's a football show. It's cool. No one's making fun of you.
It's some kind of bird.
some kind of bird, and yet then they turn around and call the hockey team the Thrashers. I don't get that, but anyways,
yeah, that's a cool. Well,
there's a guy that was going for Rookie of the Year last year in the NFL, and the guy played for the New York Giants, wide receiver, didn't play a fourth of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he got Rookie of the Year.
That was like four games.
Okay.
Look at his production still. He's still better than all the other rookies.
Exactly. The Rookie of the Year is a different situation because you have a lower bar set. A rookie, in pretty much every year, pretty much every rookie is going to play far below the star player for every team in that league. Okay? That's just the truth. Now, granted, in Odell Beckham Jr.'s case, first of all, I believe the Rookie of the Year is an element of that is fan voting. I could be wrong. But that catch that he made with the three fingers, man, look, no one else, they weren't going to talk about anything else.
Something that's I thought was pretty interesting and was that in pregame warmups, you usually just throw the ball straight back and forth, catch, throw it back to the other guy, blah, blah, blah. The way Odell Beckham Jr. practices during that time is he has people throw him like I'm sure maybe he got like Jay Cutler to help him out because he like throws it errantly.
Eli Manning?
What's that?
Eli Manning.
Well, I was saying.
Well, he
that.
Was saying in during the week and stuff on Sundays he probably has Jay Cutler because how bad he throws.
It's like
to throw the ball. I have to go up and try to catch it one handed.
During his practice,
you gotta think like Weasel. you know how Chicago and New York are really close together. You know they get together on weekends.
All I'm saying is that the way that he practices and he makes those amazing catches is that during warmups he has him like throw like a crazy pass like 10 yards over his head and stuff, and he'll adjust. He'll like do that crazy catch before the game, and then when it comes game time. Ooh, look, he did it again type of thing. So that I think that's kind of interesting. I don't usually see people do that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, you know, basketball players, you know, doing half-court shots and warm-ups and stuff like that. I mean, I'm not against it, but I wouldn't make it part of the entire team's regimen, if that makes sense. I don't know. Anyways.
Yeah, but going back to the injury, I mean, even college football with the Heisman, if someone gets injured, they're not recognized as the Heisman.
Correct.
Like Dennis Dixon, who was the Oregon Ducks.
Okay.
When he tore his ACL in, I think it was 2009. No, it was actually probably before that.
It was, but at any rate.
Right. So he tore his ACL, and the Oregon Ducks just went downhill off of that. That shows true MVP right there.
You're
when,
right.
When you're winning and you get, like, you tear your ACL and, like, your 11th week, 12th week, the game. Leading all this, you're at the top of the Heisman votes. You get injured, then you're not eligible anymore.
True. And that's a good point, but the technicality I would hit you with on that is the Heisman is not an MVP award. That award is for performance. Like, stats, in my opinion, and actually, if you guys don't agree with this is actually a pretty decent topic. We'll just roll with this for a minute. Should statistics matter more in voting for the Heisman than for an MVP award like the NFL MVP, whatever.
So it's kind of like voting for an offensive player of the year. Or maybe you know, take some defensive players into account. But for the Heisman, yeah, it's not an MVP. I see it as like a more of an offensive player of the year type thing.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I agree. And I think because it's more statistics driven, you're not going to get another defensive player to get it. If Ndamukong Suh couldn't get it, no one's going to get it. That's pretty much where I'm at. Yeah, that's where I'm at. That's my attitude on the Heisman. But yeah, I think you're right. I think because of the nature of the award, it's in its mission statement. It describes the best player in college football. Rather than the most essential to their team.
But it's also supposed to say with integrity and something else that they just totally wipe out as well.
Yeah, get this Bianchi crap off my show, please. Thank you. I'm over the Orlando Sentinels, Mike Bianchi, and his integrity clause. If he wants to talk about integrity, he should check his own writing. Oh, no, he didn't. Yes, he did. Anyways, I'm not fond of Mike Bianchi. I believe he's stealing money from you guys because you guys could do a better show than him every morning. I'm just saying. Moving on.
It was 2007. Dennis Dixon got hurt.
Yeah, I figured it was before 2009. Yeah. At any rate. But yeah. Anyways, that'll do enough with that. Let's go with this. Very interesting concept, because we just mentioned the MVP voting and how quarterbacks versus J.J. Watt basically was what it came down to. Of course, unanimously, we all picked J.J. Watt because we are great football minds, and the rest of the world in the sports media didn't because they're dumb or something like that. Look, the point is this. If you are a GM and you're looking to build a team, where do you start? Chris.
I'd look at the coach for one, the system, if it is or not.
Because
if it's a system like with Belichick, that says all the time, doesn't matter, you can plug and play players in there, I'd say defense. Look at what the Patriots did when they won back in 2002, 2003, 2005 was when they won.
And in 2014.
Right. They had a secondary. When they lost to the Giants in 2007, 2010, they had no secondary. You can't go up there and can't.
Asante
Samuel's there in.
He was there.
No, he was before.
But not
he wasn't
one.
For this.
You're right. He wasn't in.
I don't think he was there for 2007 either. He was playing for the Eagles at that time.
No, he was in, there because he I was, remember because he caught an interception, and they ruled him out of bounds, but he really wasn't, and it was in that Super Bowl.
I think it was. It is the Giants game, but he dropped it. He didn't. He flat out, he had an interception that most likely would have stopped
the
game. But I'm just saying that he dropped it.
Okay, fine.
So,
but he dropped it, that meaning that he was in that game, meaning he was playing for the Patriots. That's what
correct.
You're trying to say.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So, regardless of your take on the
call. But Ty Law already left then. Because the first ones,
he was
already.
Hell, Ty Law had been on two teams by then.
Right, but so was Asante Samuel. I mean, he started in 2003 with them. With their first win,
yeah, it was Asante Samuel. The other side was still comparatively weak, and they still had Rodney Harrison because he's the one that got punked on the Tyree catch.
So it was 2007. He left in 2008.
Right.
Asante from the Patriots. So yeah he was there, but that's all they had at corner was
correct.
Asante Samuel. They didn't have two like they did
with
this year with Browner,
and Browner
right,
yes.
And then also with Ty Law and Asante, but also with James Harrison in the back there as safety as well.
Not James Harrison, Rodney Harrison. Right.
Well, it was a Harrison. So I say if you start with a defensive player and go that way because you can't always outscore opponents. I mean, look at the Patriots 2007, 2010 season. Look at the Packers every year. They try to put up tons of points. But if they can't stop it, even last year was the Colts.
Right.
You know, they'll high fire, power offense will score. But if you can't stop anywhere, you're not going to make it anywhere.
Here's the thing, and I like where you're going, but fundamentally there's one aspect that I think that strategy falls short. Actually, you know what? Before I go to that, Weasel, where do you start?
I'll say the traditional.
How about you say it to the microphone?
The traditional answer that people would have would be the franchise quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the thing about that is that for defense, like J.J. Watt is going to be the example for a defensive player, definitely. The thing is, you got double teams and stuff like that. You could kind of, it's tough for him. He's, that good that he can beat those. But for a defense, if you can stop people, you just need, when you have a great defense, like the Bears or defenses of old, like that, you have the scoring. If they can't keep up with the,
you're doing fine.
I would say the quarterback because you have a team like the New Orleans Saints who their defense wasn't exactly that great, but Breeze was able to keep them in games. And
actually, okay, so if you mentioned the touchdown, the Super Bowl winning Saints, they may not have been a great defense, but they were an aggressive defense that got a lot of turnovers.
That's true. Yeah,
they got fewer turnovers and got progressively worse. What happened to the Saints? They eventually missed the damn playoffs.
Yeah.
Which is why you're seeing the moves that you saw in this offseason. Right?
So I'm looking at more like an Andrew Luck or something. So
Interesting. Here's what it is, guys. I'm a little shocked at you, Chris. I thought your answer would be more in this direction. You have to start in the trenches. There's not a middle ground here. Okay? Joe Flacco, arguably the worst Super Bowl winning quarterback ever in existence. I said possibly.
Yeah, I got one too. It's another Baltimore Raven.
Yeah, Trent Dilfer. I know the contest is there, right? It's between those two, which, and by the way, to your point, those teams both had great defenses.
Correct.
I understand that.
Right.
But for Joe Flacco, I don't know the offensive line for that Trent Dilfer team as well as I know this one. Okay? Michael Orr, Yamon Figures, there we go. Matt Burke is going into the Hall of Fame one year. The only reason why he's not going to do it first ballot is two reasons. A, because he's an O-lineman, and B, he happened to have the unfortunate aspect of the fact that he is retiring the same year as Ray Lewis. They're not going to put two Ravens that close together on that ballot. And oh, by the way, there's just a lot of other players. I broke it down a while back. I don't have the list fresh in my head. Matt Burke isn't going to make the cut. It's just what it is. And not for nothing, he's not going to make it next year because people will be trying to get Ed Reed in. Then, I think Michael Orr is still a member of that team, too. That was his last year as a Raven. I could have that wrong. But Yamon Figures is great. That's a solid O-line. Matt Burke retires. Movement happens on that offensive line. And suddenly Joe Flacco ain't the mule he used to be. You know, and this is a line I mentioned in the upcoming episode too. I don't have a problem with Joe Flacco because he's a game manager. I have a problem with Joe Flacco because other than the 2013 playoffs, he manages games poorly. What was it, 5 interceptions? We were talking
about.
Yeah,
it was 5 interceptions.
Maybe 30,000 in interception or something.
$15,000 in interception.
Excuse me, there you go. Anyways. But however, that O-line is the difference between a bad quarterback playing good or even a good quarterback, a great quarterback, playing bad. If there are protection problems and you have a Peyton Manning who's stone-footed or even a Tom Brady, the game is over. Hey, Chris, the real key to that Super Bowl you cite is that defensive line of the Giants abusing the Patriots up front in both
right.
games.
Correct.
And it's because that protection plan wasn't there and that O-line wasn't what it used to be. You know, very interesting. In 2014, in last season, the Super Bowl winning Patriots got walloped by the Chiefs on Monday night. They're talking about the end of the Brady era and Jimmy Garoppolo starting. Patriots fans are doing this. And then they want to turn around and try to tell me how Brady's better than Manning. Different topic. But Logan Mankins had just left a few weeks ago, going to the Bucks. They were still shoring up that offensive line, getting things to make sense. Hell, they had a rookie center. And as they got more intact, as the strategy was changed and improved, they were able to rely on the defense a little bit more as well because of the corners you mentioned, Chris. I'll give you that. But once that O-line found their spot, it was a completely different game. Just my two cents. Even the great Brady is useless without protection. I think the one guy who defies the protection concept is Aaron Rodgers. Just saying. Now, you mentioned, well, Cal, you love J.J. Watt so much. How come you don't agree with defense? If I have a good enough O-line, I can double-team J.J. Watt. Because people talk about one-on-one matchups with receivers and corners, right? What's something that's even more dangerous? One-on-one matchups in the trenches. Because if you make just one mistake, the quarterback might miss the throw, or the quarterback might not see the receiver break open, or the quarterback could have been forced to the other side of the field to where it's not there. One-on-one on the offensive line, if you get beat, the play's probably over. There's not a middle ground on that. You know, so if you got a guy, if you got an O-line like the Cowboys, who can win the one-on-one matchups and focus on a team's big threat, pass rushing, it's a completely different football game. And look at Tony Romo. Went from complete goat to hero all over again. Now, granted, on this show, we've talked about, even the Giants fan here has talked about how Tony Romo's oppressed a little bit too much. But the difference is made with the beef. Now, if you were to ask me what the second most important thing is, guess what? Chris is right. It's the damn pass rush. as much as you talk about these corners, Chris, these other Super Bowl winning teams that the Patriots had, let's walk through some names. Ty Warren, Vince Wilfork, Richard Seymour, Mike Vrabel, Teddy Bruschi, Willie McGinnis. I know I'm forgetting somebody. Roosevelt Colvin. There we go. All members of that defensive front. And a guest appearance by Junior Seau at some point, I think, too. You know.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's the thing I was getting to. I'm like, they had corners, but they also had the front seven make a corner, make or break a corner.
Yeah.
Or, you know, the corner can make a break a the often, you know, improve the front seven as
chances,
well.
I'll put it that way.
Yeah. Correct. So that's why I said you start with defense first. Of course, I'd start with the front seven originally because, you know, secondary. I was just saying as a point, that was the difference between that, the defense itself, but really corners are the big main thing with the Patriots on there. But with the Ravens, it was their front seven in the 2000 Super Bowl and again one they just won recently.
And I would maintain with the Patriots crew, I mean, as 3-4 defenses go, they rivaled some of the Steelers teams that won recently with Roethlisberger. I mean, look, Chris Hoke, Chris Hampton, Brett Kiesel. Name me another defensive lineman for the Steelers.
Case Hampton.
I named them.
Aaron Smith.
Right. Who?
You said Aaron Smith?
I did not say Aaron Smith. Very good, Weasel. Okay. But those linebackers, wee! Larry Foote, James Ferrier, James Harrison. Yeah, Harrison had the damn 100-yard return. And the one against the Cardinals. I mean, good God. And, oh, by the way, there's this guy, Troy Polamalu. Maybe you heard of Ryan Clark. Oh, hey, when Clark wasn't there, Chris Hope, Ike Taylor, Chris Townsend.
And possibly the most important name of them would be Dick LeBeau.
Without question. And you mentioned the coaching staff, too, being central to your selection when you said it, too. But here's the thing. And you mentioned, like you mentioned out of the gate, J.J. Watt. Here's the thing. If you're a GM building a team, can you really put all your eggs in the basket of landing a guy like a J.J. Watt? Which I guess the final point of all this being, this is how important talent evaluation is. Because if you can get a hold of that guy, guess what? Your job has just got a lot easier. Bottom line. Like, the Texans didn't have to draft anybody on defense this year.
Correct, because they used their other first-round pick last year on Jadeveon Clowney.
Jadeveon Clowney, yes. True.
So, I mean,
they, on top of the fact they got Vince frickin' Wilfork in the middle.
Right.
I need to talk to Demos. We need to make a trailer for a horror movie about that defensive line. The world's fastest immovable object. The man they call SWAT. Da-da-da. Anyways.
SWAT and squat.
Okay. The reason why I can't go with that is it just sounds like someone taking a dump. Hey. I'm sorry.
And because all Vince Wilfork has to do is squat there in the middle.
That's all he has
to
do.
That's what I said. You got SWAT and squat.
But here's the thing. He does more than that. You find me another guy who's damn near 400 that run, or at least 350 that runs like that. You can't do it. I don't know. I'm just saying. Anyways. Well, we didn't exactly stay on topic, but hey, you wouldn't know that until I just said it out there. This will pretty much take us towards the end of the show. Of course, check us out. The website, www.ngsesports.com, where we never stop. That's right. It's even football offseason, and we're talking football. Football! That's why. Dang it. And of course, check us out on Twitter. I am at the SOTG. Of course, you can find Weasel.
Yeah, boy.
Steve Weasel Hurley at Weasel, the SOTG, and find Chris on Twitter at Hydraulic Upright. That's with a U-P-R-I-T-E. Sorry, sort of European like that, right? Except, you know, well, you like soccer. It works. But
well, that was one character short, and Twitter is one character too short for the name.
Yeah, I like, the right way. I like my version better. But at any rate, find us there on Twitter. Of course, you can check out the NGSC Sports page as well. And yeah, we're on Facebook too. Student of the Game on Facebook. Let us know what you think. Any sort of reactions, contributions you may have, we'll be more than happy to take it. Of course, during the week, keep checking the NGSC Sports YouTube for the second episode of the Sports Symposium. And if you haven't seen it yet, go ahead and check out episode one. I think it's good, but then I'm kind of biased. Maybe you should go check it out and prove me right or wrong. I don't know. That's up to you. But anyways, until next time, fans. Class dismissed.